Welcome to Science TLDR, the podcast that helps you get to the bottom of complex research. And today we're doing a deep dive into decomposing causality into its synergistic, unique, and redundant components, a paper from Nature Communications.
Oh, this is a good one.
It is. It's a fascinating look at causality, you know, how we actually figure out if one thing causes another.
Right, because as scientists, we're always trying to get at that, right? What causes what?
Exactly. But it's not always so simple, is it?
No, it's rarely straightforward. And this paper introduces a new method called SUR. It's designed to kind of untangle those causal relationships, especially in these really complex systems we're often looking at.
Well, let's start with the basics. Like, how do we even define causality? Because I think people often mix that up with just, like, correlation or association.
Yeah, that's a really important distinction.
Right. So, like, just because two things happen together, it doesn't mean one caused the other.
Exactly. Correlation just means there's a statistical relationship. Like, ice cream sales and crime rates both go up in the summer.
Haha, right.
But that doesn't mean one causes the other, obviously.
No, the heat is the confounder there.
Yeah.
Okay, so how does this paper, how does SRD actually tackle the problem of establishing true causality?
So it uses a framework based on information theory, which basically means it looks at how information flows between variables.
The correlation flow.
Yeah. And this allows it to go beyond just like simple correlation. It can identify these different types of causal interactions, and they break it down into three main ones: redundant, unique, and synergistic.
I like how they explain it using the analogy of like baking a cake.
Yeah, it's a really great analogy.
Can you walk us through that?
Sure. So imagine you're trying to figure out, you know, what makes a cake rise? You've got all these different ingredients, flour, eggs, baking powder, and so on. SRD would say that flour is probably a redundant cause. You know, having two bags of flour doesn't change the outcome, right?
Right, you still get a cake.
Exactly. But then eggs, they're likely a unique cause. You need them. You can't really substitute them. And then you have baking powder, which only works in synergy with something acidic.
So it has to interact with other ingredients.
Yeah, it's like this chemical reaction.
Yeah.
Creates those air bubbles.
Got it. So flour redundant, eggs unique, baking powder synergistic. That's actually a really helpful way to think about it. Now, another thing that stood out to me about this SRMA is this concept of causality leak.
Oh, yeah. That's a really interesting idea.
Can you explain what that is?
Sure. So basically, in any complex system, there are going to be unobserved variables, right? Things we're not measuring or might not even know about. And the causality leak is kind of quantifying the influence of those hidden factors.
So it's like acknowledging that there's always more to the story than what we can directly observe.
Exactly. And what's really neat is that SR doesn't pretend to magically solve that problem. It just gives us a way to estimate how much of what we're seeing might be due to those things we're not seeing.
Okay, so that's pretty powerful, being able to at least estimate that unknown influence.
It is. It makes our analysis more robust. You know, we're not just ignoring those hidden variables, we're at least trying to account for them.
I like that. Now, before we go too deep into how SRD actually works, I think it's worth talking about why we need new methods like this in the first place. Like, what are the limitations of the traditional approaches to establishing causality? You know, like randomized controlled trials, for example. Those are often seen as the gold standard, right?
They are, but, you know, they're not always feasible. I mean, imagine trying to study the effects of air pollution on respiratory health. You can't exactly randomly expose people to high levels of pollution just to see what happens.
Yeah, ethically, that's a no-go.
Exactly. And then you have fields like economics or climate science where you can't rewind time and run controlled experiments.
Right. History only happens once.
And even when you can do interventions, they often oversimplify things, right? Like, life's not a controlled lab experiment. There's so much going on, so many interacting factors.
So that's where observational studies come in.
Right. But those have their own limitations, too, you know?
Like what?
Well, confounding, for one. Like, we might observe that people who drink a lot of coffee are more likely to have heart disease.
Oh, interesting.
But does that mean coffee causes heart disease?
Not necessarily, right? There could be another factor, like stress, that influences both.
So it's like the ice cream and crime example again.
Exactly. And then real-world relationships are often nonlinear, right?
Yeah.
A small change in one variable might not do much, but a larger change could trigger something significant. And traditional methods don't always handle those nuances well.
And I imagine the noise in the data can be a problem too, right? Like
yeah.
Measurement error, missing data, random fluctuations.
Oh, absolutely. It's like trying to hear a whisper in a hurricane. And that's where SUD's approach is so powerful.
Brilliant.
Because it looks at causality as information transfer. It can deal with that noise and nonlinearity much better. Okay, I'm starting to get why people are excited about this method. It seems like it offers a more, I don't know, a more robust and nuanced way to tackle this whole issue of causality, especially when the traditional methods aren't really cutting it.
Yeah, it's a very promising tool, but like any new method, we need to be cautious, right? There are still limitations to consider, and we need more research to really refine how we use it.
Absolutely. And with that in mind, we'll discuss some of those limitations in the next part of our deep dive.
Welcome back.
So we've talked about all the cool things SRD can do, but as you mentioned, no method is perfect.
Right, exactly. There are definitely some limitations. One of the big ones is data requirements. SRD needs a good amount of data to work properly.
Okay, so like how much are we talking?
Well, it has to estimate probability distributions for all these variables. So you need a data set that's big enough and representative enough, especially as the number of variables you're looking at increases.
So if you have limited data, you might get unreliable results.
Yeah, potentially. It uses some fancy math like transport maps to deal with some data limitations, but it's not a cure-all. Researchers really need to think about their data before using SRD.
Makes sense. What about computational complexity? Does it take a lot of computing power to run this thing?
It can. As your system gets more complex, with more variables and interactions, the computational cost goes up.
So for fields like genomics or climate modeling, that could be a real bottleneck.
Right. I mean, those data sets are massive. So there's definitely a need for like more efficient algorithms, ways to optimize SRD for those large scale analyses.
Right. Yeah. Make it run faster. Okay. So data requirements, computational complexity, any other limitations we should know about?
One more important one is that SRD assumes stationarity.
Okay, now remind me what stationarity is again.
Basically, it assumes that the statistical properties of the data stay the same over time. But in a lot of real-world systems, that's not the case.
Yeah, I mean, things are constantly changing.
Exactly. Like, if you're studying the evolution of a disease or the stock market, those systems are anything but stationary.
Right. Things are dynamic.
So using SRE on those kinds of systems could lead to problems. We need more research to figure out how to adapt SRD to deal with those temporal dynamics.
So basically some exciting possibilities with SRD, but we need to keep those limitations in mind.
Exactly. I mean, imagine if we could really untangle the causes of climate change or figure out the key genetic factors for a disease.
Or see the real impact of like social policies or economic interventions.
Right. It could be revolutionary. But again, it's a tool and we need to use it wisely alongside other methods.
And one thing I keep coming back to is that concept of causality leak. It's like a reminder that we never have the full picture, do we?
No, we don't. There's always more to learn. It's almost like SRD is embracing uncertainty, saying, hey, we can never be 100% certain, but we can get a better handle on how much we don't know.
Which is a pretty big deal when you think about it. It changes how we think about science, doesn't it? It's not about finding absolute truth. It's about continuously refining our understanding.
Exactly. And it changes how we communicate our findings, too. We need to be upfront about the uncertainty, the limitations of our models, encourage people to think critically, to not take things at face value.
Okay, so lots to think about here. Lots of potential, but also some important caveats to keep in mind. So with that in mind, let's move on to the final part of our deep dive, where we'll wrap up the key takeaways from this paper and think about what it all means for the future of scientific research. Welcome back to Science TLDR. We've spent this episode really getting into the weeds with SRD, this new method for analyzing causality. We talked about what it can do, what it can't do, and why it's got people so excited.
It's a powerful tool, but like with any new method, it's important to understand the implications. Like, how does this change the way we think about research?
Right, exactly. So as we wrap things up, let's try to distill the key takeaways here. What are the big things researchers should be thinking about going forward?
Well, the first one, I think, is that causality is complex. It's not enough to just look for correlation. You need to look deeper, understand the types of interactions going on. Are they redundant, unique, synergistic? And what about those hidden variables we might not even be measuring? SRD gives us a way to start tackling those questions.
It's a more nuanced view, isn't it? Like, not just does A cause B, but how does A cause B? What's the second takeaway?
SRD gives us a way to actually quantify causality. It goes beyond those traditional methods. You know, the randomized controlled trials, the regressions, it can handle nonlinear stuff, noisy data, even try to figure out the impact of those hidden variables.
Which is huge, especially when you're dealing with complex systems, right? Where you can't always do those controlled experiments.
Exactly. And the third takeaway, I think it's the reminder that science is a process. It's about constant exploration, acknowledging what we don't know, and refining our understanding.
It's like embracing uncertainty, right?
Yeah.
Saying, okay, we may never have the absolute truth, but we can get closer bit by bit.
And that has implications for how we communicate science, too. We need to be more upfront about uncertainty, avoid oversimplifying things, encourage critical thinking.
So this paper is a call to action for scientists to think differently about causality, to use these new tools, and to be mindful of the bigger picture.
And ultimately, I think it's about using this knowledge to make a difference, to solve those real-world problems.
That's a great point to end on. So that's it for our deep dive into SRAD. We hope you found it helpful. And until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep pushing the boundaries of what we know.